Support for Art Talks comes from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com. And from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from Red Band Coffee Company, local roaster, offering individually prepared coffees, New Orleans-style iced coffee, and whole bean coffee at two locations in Davenport. Information is at redbandcoffee.com.
Well, hello and welcome. You've tuned into a conversation among artists. For the next hour, we'll be exploring the mind and the creativity of our guests. This is Art Talks, and I'm your host, Bruce Carter. Well, hello once again and welcome. Acting and plays and Dr. Faustus is our theme for today. We have members of the Parenzi Players. They've been going for 12 years. Davenport, the Quad Cities, is becoming quite a theater community. Jake Walker is with us. He's the director of Dr. Faustus. Aaron Sullivan, who's playing Dr. Faustus himself, and he even kind of looks like him, that ominous kind of look with the beard. And the. We have Kitty Israel, who's playing Mephistopheles, and Stephanie Moeller, who's playing Gretchen. They'll be in the next set. But with us in this one is Jake Walker, director, and Aaron Sullivan, who's playing the good doctor, or maybe the bad doctor himself. Now, is this is a combination of Goethe's Faust and Marlowe's Faust.
Correct.
And what did you do? Did you change the ending? Did you make everyone nicer? Is this?
Well, I wish I could say it was an original idea to combine different versions of the Faustus story, but it's not. Combining different versions of it has happened before, and actually I kind of got the idea. There is a Czech film by a filmmaker named Jan Svankmajer, just called Faust, and it's this art house movie with just about every different take on the Faust story that exists. There's Marlowe, there's Goethe, there's Berlioz opera thrown in, Thomas Mann, there's just everything all crammed together, and I thought it was really interesting. I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to stage something like that? And then I thought, well, why? Why do this? And the story of a deal with the devil is such a universal story that exists in all different areas of culture, across from one culture to another. New versions of it keep popping up. I mean, essentially, now, like Breaking Bad is essentially a Faust story if you really look at it, and it's more of a metaphorical take on it. So I thought it would be an interesting thing to do. I had directed... back when I was a teacher, I directed Marlowe's Faustus with my high schoolers, albeit a very, very, very reduced version of it. But so I thought, what's something new I could do that I hadn't done before? And so I sat down and I read Goethe's Faust, and I extracted what I believe to be the most stageable part of it, the love plot line, and inserted it into Marlowe's Faust. I think it's created a pretty neat, coherent story. The heart of the story is still there. It's just, I guess, enhanced by another plot line that's in it. You asked about the endings, and the two plays end differently. It's called Tragedy is in the title of the Marlowe, so you can obviously tell that probably things don't turn out too well for the good doctor in that one. But in Goethe's Faust... he dies, but his soul is saved. And so initially when I got the idea to do this, I thought, wouldn't it be neat if we learned both endings and somehow the audience decides whether he is damned or he is saved? And I thought, that's a cool idea.
And we really couldn't find a way to incorporate the audience choice into it that was satisfactory.
Right.
And discussions that Jake and I had had.
There was like a Tinkerbell, clap your hands, and
fairies kind of thing. I don't think that's going to work.
And
thumbs up or thumbs down, the emperor.
Exactly. We went thumbs down, and the final nail in the coffin of that idea was when I actually read, because Goethe's Faust is in two parts, and part one is great, and part two is kind of a struggle to get through. And in the end of part two, he basically dies and Mephistopheles shows up with demons and lemurs, an army of lemurs. I didn't write it. to get the soul, and then angels rain down flaming rose petals to distract the demons, and one of the angels flirts with Mephistopheles to distract him, and they whisk Faust's soul away while they're not looking. So I said,
no.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
No, Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah. So we're going with Marlowe's ending.
The tragic ending?
Yes, we're going with he's on a train to destruction there at the end of it, but... There are some added scenes from Goethe's version that I think work really well.
Is there any redeeming social value to it? Is there any hope that we're given, or is it just all destruction and death?
I think there is some hope. I mean, not everyone is damned, and like one of the, I don't want to really give anything away, but like it's not all, not everyone goes to hell, not everyone who is tempted is destroyed. For me, I hadn't read Goethe, the end of Goethe's Faust. So the coffin nail for me was, I don't think this character is ever going to repent. I think that's where it came to for me. It's like, because that's to be saved, you have to repent, and this character, for whatever reason, he's not going.
He's too tied into what he got.
I think so. I think there's also a great deal of he's ashamed. Like, I think he's too ashamed at what he's done to ask for forgiveness. It's something I'm working with right now. I'm not sure if it's going to stay that way. But
how are you playing the character? You're playing this guy.
That is a very good question. Well, I think it seems to be a study on wasted potential. Like in the beginning, the first speech that he has is he's going through all the subjects that he has mastered in school. And become a doctor of, and one by one he finds reasons to be bored with them or not to pursue them anymore. It's like this is an incredibly intelligent man who wants to know everything, and human knowledge has its limits, and that's the thing that begins him on the path. Like, that's, well, I've learned all these things, and here are all the problems with philosophy, with medicine, with law, with divinity. What about magic? So he brings in a couple magicians, and they're like, yeah, we can teach you magic. And he kind of begins on this. He has these noble intentions, how he's going to fix the schools, and he's going to make Germany a strong state, incapable of being attacked by other states, and no longer a series of warring individual states. And then he just kind of spends 23 years messing with people. Like, he's going to...
I've got the power.
Yeah, and then he doesn't do anything with it.
Oh, man. Gosh. That's kind of a metaphor for technology and for the Renaissance and for Dürer. I don't know if you're familiar with the German artist, did a print called Melancholia, where this angel is sitting kind of just bemoaning his fate and all of the accoutrements of science and math and all those that you named were there in front of him or her. But there's just a certain boredom, and there's just a certain dissatisfaction with what else can you show me?
Yeah.
Gosh, but you know, if you traded your soul to be the best guitarist in the world, wouldn't you really like to play guitar? Wouldn't you enjoy something? Or was that what he was doing?
I think he gets, I think part of being bored so easily is he gets easily distracted. And one of the things that Mephistopheles does is constantly showing him new things. Like, let's travel, let's ride around the world on dragons, and here's how the universe works. So he's just constantly being distracted, and he never gets around to doing all the amazing things that he wanted to do.
Oh, it's kind of like Facebook, then.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you're just so sucked into it. It's like, oh, this is interesting, where does this lead? And then by that, you have 3 or 4 hours
to
pass
by.
It's free fall. Very interesting. Well, we're talking with the Prenzi players. We're talking with Jake Walker, who's the director, and Aaron Sullivan, who's playing Dr. Faustus. Kitty Israel and Stephanie Miller will be in the next set. Directing this play, do you have certain ideas of how you want it to be? Where do those ideas come from? How do you direct a play? Do you pretty much just go with the script, don't you?
I mean, things need to be justified by the text, of course. For this one, we've altered things more significantly. I mean, by combining two different scripts into one. We've made a fairly significant alteration, but we didn't really remove anything. We more just padded it out. It's been interesting directing this play so far because, I mean, I saying that it feels like I'm directing two plays is obvious because I am, but the two-play feeling to me doesn't come from the Marlowe versus the Goethe. Those seem to just blend together perfectly in my mind. It's actually conflicts within the Marlowe that make it feel like two different plays.
That's true.
It's the they're well.
It's the comic characters.
It's the comic characters. Like my world, like I bridge. I'm one of the few characters that bridges both the Marlowe and the Goethe. It's me and Mephistopheles, and then everyone else is kind of divided. Mm-hmm. But the comic characters, they kind of seem like they're, I don't know, they're not coming from a different play, but they are definitely in a different world.
Well, there are these clown characters that are sprinkled throughout the show. And there's some speculation that they were actually added in a later draft of the play. And there's even some scholars that say maybe somebody else even added them into the show. So that's where it feels weird. Like I try to separate who's coming what night. I want to try to make the most of the actor's time. So we have one night where it's just weeping, tragedy, awful things happening. And then the next night, it's just goofball antics the whole night, depending on the scenes that we're working on. So that's where the two play, where it feels like it's two different plays, actually is within just the Marlowe.
But you need that. Even Shakespeare did that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. This would be the comedy is very, very much needed in this.
Oh, sure.
And it offsets the tragedy. I mean, if the characters are just sad the whole time, it's you're going to lose interest. You have to be reminded that there is laughter in the world. Uh-huh.
So how do you direct a play? What do you do? I mean, you take your baton and go downbeat or
You know, there's a lot. I mean, the prep work for this show has been a pretty long time in the making. I cut the script and combined the two last summer, and you know, finding a good public domain version of the Goethe was essential because we didn't want to mess with any legal issues there. And actually, we had one of our company members, Katie Osborne, kind of took the public domain and kind of wrote her own version of the Goethe's Faust. So we actually have pretty much an entirely new original version of the Goethe to put in here. A lot of directing. The hardest part is just getting the right people on the bus, you know, sitting down to cast. And
what are you looking for when you say, why did you pick this guy to play Goethe?
He walked through the door. It's
there's, I mean, some character quality,
right? Right. I mean, I try to go into it with as open a mind as I possibly can. And you always have, especially for a role like Faustus, I mean, you always have a few potential people in mind because you don't want to go into a character that has half the lines in the play with no idea who could possibly play them. But, you know, oftentimes when I have an idea of maybe who might do it, that idea gets thwarted in auditions. Like, I think if I had some hypothetical cast in my mind before auditions, it didn't turn out like that at all, which is a really exciting thing to me. You never know how it's going to turn out.
The audition process was immense. I mean, it was like almost a full day of going out, read with this person, come back in, and trying to like. And as an actor, you try to like, okay, how can I use this space? What can I? How can I move through this space that would convey what I think about Faustus at this time, which will change completely once you start rehearsing.
Right.
So it was just a lot of auditioning.
So you basically have an idea of what you want, but you keep an open mind.
Yes.
And then when somebody comes in who kind of falls into the slot, you go, you're it?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and sometimes someone will bring someone something in auditions and read in a certain way that I never even considered, and it completely changes my perception of what I wanted for the character, and we go that route instead.
Interesting. So you're open for the best idea in the room.
I think a very essential part of directing is knowing a good idea when you hear it, you know, regardless of where it comes from. That's for me.
You're not imposing your idea?
Oh, I have my own ideas for sure.
He has the final word. One of Jake's greatest strengths is he knows a good idea from a bad idea. And even if it doesn't originate from him, he's like, we're doing that now. When he sees it, he knows it's going to work, he knows it's good.
So you have veto power.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you have the imprimatur, you go, this is it. So the play really is a confluence of the actors, the director, the script, and the place and the space.
Yeah, I mean, that's so. Not kind of, it's not universal how everyone does it, but that is kind of the way our company works. So it's just a very, we mine ideas from wherever they happen to come from, and we just kind of see what happens.
And one of the things about Elizabethan theater, be it Shakespeare or Marlowe, is there aren't really, there are a few stage directions, but there isn't a lot. Like when you look at a modern play, like you might have like one line of text and then like half a page in parentheses about what the character is feeling and how they're moving and what prop they pick up. So a lot of plays are very prescriptive what you should do. But with Elizabethan theater, it's like Faustus enters.
And that's about all you
and
get.
And that's it. So you have to find, what does he do?
Like, rose his cape.
What do you, you know, how does he move across the room? Is he reading books? What's he?
Is that your or yours? Who's in charge of that? Who?
Well, I block the show. And we play with it, and then sometimes an actor will have an idea, and I'll say, sure, let me see it. And after I see it, I'll say, yes, let's do that, or thanks for presenting the idea, but maybe not that one. So basically the overall framework comes from the director, but we get we'll mine the cast for ideas the whole way through.
That's a great way of working, though. I think that a lot.
It's worked well for us so far.
Yeah. Are there different methods of acting that you espouse, or are there different ways of
I kind of feel like to each his own, and however you get there best. Mm-hmm. I tend not to use the method. I use a lot of like, what is the text telling me? How the way the words are being used indicate what the emotion might be? I try to build up like an internal architecture as to how a character would respond given what's happening.
A backstory?
A backstory, but also like a series of like if-then statements. Like I don't have a really good example offhand right now, but like when someone moves towards me, one of the things I'm kind of playing with right now is Faustus doesn't really like to be touched. So if someone gets a little too close, I'll edge away, maybe not take a full step, but like my body language will change. I try to also include like, I know how I move, and I like how is Faustus's movement the same and different from mine own?
Oh, that's good.
We actually just, there's a sword fight in the play, and I haven't fought on stage in about,
it's been a while.
It's been a while.
But nigh on a decade.
Oh yeah. So I was very excited because I'm actually the company's so far one of the, I've done most of the choreography, most of the sword work, so I've been like itching to fight. And Faustus is a very intellectual character. So he's not a street fighter. So like, I'm pretty good with a sword, and then making this character not good with a sword. But it's a kind, it's not a magical fight, but it is, there is demonic influence. Mm-hmm. So it kind of switches from being like, what am I doing with this, to now I'm gonna execute something really complicated.
Oh, interesting.
So it's finding like, how is he the same for me? How is he different for me? What's his walk like? Where does he place his voice when he speaks? How prone is he to shout? What kind of temper does he have? So I have a lot of like external things that I kind of apply to myself. But at the same time, looking, how would I respond to this? So like one of the reasons I do theater is I want to better understand myself. And I find one of the best ways to understand myself is understanding other people. Like, if I can understand Faustus's motivations, I'll understand mine own better.
How does that work? That's interesting.
Pretty well for me so far. I've done some directing. I do mostly acting, but like when you're directing, you really have to be aware of like how many characters are there even in this?
61.
61 with individuals' motivation.
15 actors playing 61 characters in this show.
Wow. That's more than a coach. Excellent. Well, Jake Walker is here, directing of Dr. Faustus, and Aaron Sullivan, we've been listening to him talk about his role as Dr. Faustus. It's a combination of Goethe's and Chris Marlowe's Dr. Faustus. Kitty Israel and Stephanie Moeller are in the wings. Let's take a short break right now with the Frenzy Players, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
Well,
on exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Carriage Gallery in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport through September 5th, the 10th annual Carriage Exhibition. This year's theme, Home. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. At the Figge Art Museum at 225 West 2nd Street in Davenport through August 3rd, a movable museum, works from the UIMA School Programs Collections. Through September 7th, Innovators and Legends, Generations in Textiles and Fiber. Through September 7th, Local Threads. Through September 14th, From Pencil to Printed Page, Arthur Geisert's Thunderstorm. And through April of 2015, A Legacy for Iowa. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Thursday. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through the end of July, Acrylics by Susan Moore. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 on Saturday, 9 to 5 Sunday. At Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of August, photography by Heidi Brandt and acrylics by Leanne Westcott. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At Quad City Arts at the Airport in the Moline International Airport through August 30th, paintings by Roy Kasich and wood carvings by Bill Wolford. At the Quad City Botanical Center at 2525 4th Avenue in Rock Island through the end of July, Flamingo Follies, Monday through Saturday from 10 to 5, Sunday noon to 5. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Back on our talks, Aaron Sullivan, who's playing Dr. Faustus, and joining us now, Kitty Israel, who's playing the bad guy, Mephistopheles, in the play, or the tempter in the play, taking him all around the world and showing him all kinds of new things.
With dragons.
With dragons, right. Members of the Parenzi Players, who will be presenting Dr. Faust on July 18th, 19th, and 20th, as Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then the next week on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 8 p.m. starts. Sunday starts at 3, $10 to $15 for the price. You can go to ParenziPlayers.com to make a rezzo, and we'll be fine. But back to the play. And Kitty, you're playing this delicious, spine-tingling, kind of blood-curling, fingers swirling bad guy, and you seem very happy about it. Is it is it fun to play a bad guy?
It's so much fun to play a bad
guy.
Yes, I love it.
You sound so evil right
now. I know, I'm super evil all the time. It's a character that's so close to myself. No, it is. It's a lot of fun because it's a very extreme sort of evil to be a demon, but at the same time, we've kind of discovered the the different motivations for Mephistopheles and what brought her, because she takes on female form in the play, which works well for me, but sort of how she got to be where she is now and how she got to be in this role as the one who comes to tempt Faustus and everything that sort of drives her and motivates her.
Aaron mentioned that he's learning a lot about himself by playing these other characters and like what are the motivations and how they solve problems and how they do things. Is that working with you too?
Yes, it's a little bit scary to be discovering yourself when you're playing a demon, but it is, because there are moments where there's a line in the play where Faustus asks Mephistopheles, "Do you have any pain that torture others?" And she says, "As great as have the human souls of men." And it's not just this, you know, one-dimensional, oh, I'm evil and bad all the time, and that's just how I am. But there is a lot of depth and range of emotion there. And she feels sadness, and she feels happiness and excitement. And, she's tricky, but she's also capable of friendship.
It's interesting because and we're not the first company to do this, but they do become friends. Faustus and Mephistopheles become really good friends. In fact, the last thing Faustus says before he's literally dragged to hell is, "Oh, Mephistopheles," thinking that that friendship is going to be what saves him. And Mephistopheles was the one that was damning him the whole time. Well, he was damning himself, but she was the lever that.
Oh, how interesting! So you're dragging him down, and yet you, this is such like a movie, isn't it? It's like where you have two people and they're fighting, and yet they're becoming friends, and yet they're on opposite sides, and yet they're not.
Mm-hmm.
How interesting this relationship that you have with him,
mm-hmm.
huh? Is there a redeeming quality of Mephistopheles?
Well, I think that there are moments where she really wants to she wants Faustus to be happy to the extent that she can. But he's sold his soul. Ultimately, whether, like Aaron said, whether or not he's damned, whether or not he goes to hell, that's up to him. He makes the choice, so she facilitates whatever he wants in accordance with the choices that he has made.
The deal has been done.
Right.
Correct.
Oh, how interesting. Oh, interesting. Gosh.
And when Mephistopheles initially shows up, one of the first things she says to him is, "Stop.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do this."
Mm-hmm.
So you really do care about him. You
Yes.
really do care about humanity, even though you're a demon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I found helpful is that, you know, demons, and this is also referenced in the play, were once angels who served God. And Mephistopheles also made a choice at one point to rebel. And when Lucifer fell, she was one of the angels that fell as well. And she was driven from the face of God. And she knows what that pain is like and what that torture is like. So when she says, "Don't do this," she knows. But then when he makes the choice, it's like, okay,
wow,
fine, have it your way.
Wow, Milton's Paradise Lost.
Yeah.
Yes.
Going down. How interesting. Well, we have a prepared a scene here. You want to do a scene? Can you set it up for us?
This is shortly after. It's really early in the play after he has inquired these two magicians that he knows of to teach him how to conjure. So he tries it on his own for the first time, and he's going straight for the top. He's going to summon Mephistopheles. And it's right after Mephistopheles has appeared. And actually, the first time Mephistopheles shows up, it is in a monstrous form. And Faustus says, "Go and change. You're too ugly to attend on me."
Which is so flattering and exciting.
But that's not played by Kitty. Like, there's another monstrous demon, and then when Mephistopheles changes, we get Kitty.
Nice.
So it's right after that, right after the change has occurred, and it's the first thing that Mephistopheles says to Faustus.
"Now, Faustus, What wouldst thou have me do?
I charge thee to wait upon me whilst I live, to do whatsoever I command, be it to make the moon drop from her sphere, or the ocean to overwhelm the world.
I am a servant to great Lucifer, and may not follow thee without his leave. No more than he commands must we perform.
Did he not charge thee to appear to me?
No. I came hither of mine own accord.
Did not my conjuring speeches raise thee? Speak!
That was the cause, but yet per accidents. For when we hear one rack the name of God, abjure the scriptures and his Savior Christ, we fly in hope to get his glorious soul. Nor will we come unless he use such means whereby he is in danger to be damned. Therefore, the shortest cut for conjuring is stoutly to abjure the Trinity and pray devoutly to the Prince of Hell.
So Faustus hath already done, and holds this principle, there is no chief but only Beelzebub to whom Faustus doth dedicate himself. This word damnation terrifies not him. Tell me, what is that Lucifer, thy lord?
Arch-regent and commander of all spirits.
Was not that Lucifer an angel once?
Yes, Faustus, and most dearly loved of God.
How comes it then that he is prince of devils?
Oh, by aspiring pride and insolence, for which God threw him from the face of heaven.
What are you that live with Lucifer?
Unhappy spirits that fell with Lucifer, conspired against our God with Lucifer, and are forever damned with Lucifer.
Where are you damned?
In hell.
How comes it then that you are out of hell?
Why, this is hell. Nor am I out of it. Thinkest thou that I, who saw the face of God and tasted the eternal joys of heaven, am not tormented with 10,000 hells in being deprived of everlasting bliss? Oh, Faustus, leave these frivolous demands which strike a terror to my fainting soul.
What? Is great Mephistopheles so passionate at being deprived of the joys of heaven? Learn thou of Faustus' manly fortitude, and scorn those joys thou never shalt possess. Go, bear these tidings to great Lucifer, seeing Faustus hath incurred eternal death by desperate thoughts against Jove's deity. Say he surrenders up to him his soul, so he will spare him 24 years, letting him live in all voluptuousness, having thee ever to attend on me, to give me whatsoever I shall ask, to tell me whatsoever I demand, to slay mine enemies and aid my friends, and always be obedient to my will. Go, and return to mighty Lucifer, and meet me at midnight in my study, and then resolve me of thy master's mind.
I will, Faustus.
Oh, that was fabulous. Golly, and what an intellectual, what an arrogant Faustus.
He is so arrogant.
Look at all my books and my candles, and I've got everything here in my cape, and oh, my wine, and you are like so tender and so careful and so elegant and so refined, and what a spirit that is. Wow, and the two of you together, that was marvelous. That was wonderful
Thank
acting.
You very much.
God. And I can see how you're entering into it, and it's like you're restrained, and this, I've known people like Faust. I knew them in college, you know. Gosh, and this was so very interesting. God, that was just marvelous. That was great acting. And here we are on the radio, and people who were listening could see you perhaps in costume. What costume would you be wearing?
We haven't seen the... I think Faustus is actually going to be fairly academic, tweed jackets. And as the play progresses, relatively modern. As the play progresses, I know he kind of slips from being an academic into being like an entertainer and a magician. So I think there is some talk that at some point I am going to get a cape. So I'm happy about that.
You need a cape.
Yeah.
And what were you wearing, Mephistopheles?
I haven't seen my actual costume yet. I have seen a sketch. We have an amazing costume designer, Kate Ference, who's putting things together for us. And she showed me her concept for Mephistopheles. And it's feminine, which is nice, but not in like a... a lustful, alluring type of way, which we're trying to get away from.
We're even though Mephistopheles is a woman, or played by a woman, because what is really Mephistopheles? There isn't any kind of romantic relate. There are some productions that do that, but there's no romantic relationship between Faustus and Mephistopheles.
Yeah.
And yet
you seem to want her to attend to you.
Yeah.
So you obviously found her attractive.
Well, I don't know that the motivation is romantic. There is a lot of, one of the things we had talked about with, like, what is the relationship between Faustus and Mephistopheles? And when you cast a man and a woman as Faustus and Mephistopheles, there are going to be those questions. Mm-hmm. One thing we had talked about was that she reminds her of Lucifer before the fall and herself before the fall. Mm-hmm. Like the arrogance, the questing for knowledge, the wanting for power, and then mm-hmm. the descent.
The fall. How very interesting. Well, how do you picture yourself as her? How do you picture yourself?
Well,
tall, short, strong, intellectual, mourning.
I think that there's what I've tried to find in her is a lot of the stillness, the calm. I was joking with Stephanie, who plays Gretchen, that I would like it to be more White Witch in the new Narnia movies than in the old Narnia. But no, the stillness, the very restrained, because there is power in stillness. And it's just so much more bone chilling when there's someone, instead of yelling at you, no, just standing there going, no, don't do that. It'll be bad.
One of the ways that manifests itself is Faustus doesn't actually ask for any magical ability. Mm-hmm. Like in the contract, it's Mephistopheles is there to attend on him, and Mephistopheles does all the magic. So even when he's like at like the courts of emperors and princes, it's like these little sidebars, like Mephistopheles go do the thing, and she goes and does the thing. But he's like conjuring and flailing his arms around, and Kitty moves a finger. And it happens. So it's like the presentation versus what actually does the work.
Oh, content and form. Mm-hmm. So you've got the content, but he's doing the form.
Yeah. So she's very still, and I am all over the stage.
Oh, very interesting.
Which is difficult.
Because it's kind of the opposite of our person.
Right.
You're a moving person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you wear a lot of makeup? Are you really dark faced, or
you don't know? I've given some thought to the makeup. I don't want the makeup to be like theatrical, showy, but there will be something fun with the makeup.
Okay,
yeah.
But you kind of don't. Well, I mean, you have like 2 weeks before you go on. You have to have some conclusion on that. Or do you ever arrive at a conclusion?
Like 3 weeks. Don't hurry us. 3 weeks, yeah.
Okay. Do you arrive at a conclusion of your character, or do you leave part of it a mystery?
We finished blocking. We're about to do another run. So we still have a lot to discover.
Okay.
We have, I feel, a good skeleton of where we're going. And we've cemented the relationship. There was one night after rehearsal we were talking about it, and I had mentioned earlier, like, Faustus doesn't really like to be touched.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this kind of interesting moment where, like, I don't really like to be touched. And Mephistopheles is like, I don't really like to touch people. And that's kind of like, this is going to work.
Good. Okay. I like horror movies, too. Okay, so Aaron Sullivan is with us. He's playing Dr. Faustus and that magnificent intellectual academic voice. And Kitty Israel is playing Mephistopheles, the bad girl. The Prenzi Players, they're going to be on July 18th, 19th, and 20th. That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then the next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 24, 25, 26, $15 and $10. PrenziPlayers.com. Prenzi, mm-hmm. players.com. A great show will be had, and I was very moved by your little scene there.
Thank you.
So let's take a short break, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area, on continuing exhibit at the Renee Gray Gallery at 101 South Cody Road in LeClaire, Scored and Surfaced, works in various media by 9 artists. Hours are 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day except Sunday. At Roz Talks at 2108 3rd Avenue in Rock Island, on continuing exhibit, Object Permanence, works by 20 local artists. Hours are 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. At the German-American Heritage Center on West 2nd Street in Davenport through July 20th, 100 Years, 100 Stories, celebrating the Quad City Symphony Orchestra's Century of Excellence. Through July 28th, The World of Berta Hummel. Hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4 on Sunday. At the Galesburg Civic Arts Center on East Main Street in Galesburg through August 2nd, works by Michael Acera and Walter Arnold. Through July 24th, works by Yvonne Hamm. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10:30 to 4:30, Saturday from 10:30 to 3. At the Muscatine Art Center at 1314 Mulberry Avenue in Muscatine, through the end of August, wood carvings by Norman Bunn. Through January 25th, Railroads of Muscatine County. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursday evening 7 to 9, Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 5. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque, through July 13th, Marcia Wegman, Midwest Landscapes, through August 3rd, from the permanent collection, Ilse Silteman's Holzer, through September 1st, Edward S. Curtis and Thomas Moran. The Grant Wood Galleries on continuing exhibit. Hours are Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays, 1 to 4. At the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art at 410 3rd Avenue in Cedar Rapids, through September 7th, Carl Van Vechten, photographer to the stars, through November 2nd, Marvin Cohn on my mind, the ceramics of Dean Schwartz. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Back on our talks with the Parenzi Players. This program and many, many previous programs going back about 2 years are available on our website, wvik.org. Click on the schedule button at the top of the page and stroll on down Thursday nights at 7 to Art Talks. Click on Art Talks and they will appear by date, the name of the artist, and a brief description of what they're about, and we'll probably call you actors or something like that. Very interesting play, Dr. Faustus, combination of Marlowe and Goethe's Faustus with your own twist. A woman playing Mephistopheles, playing it very well. The reading they gave was terrific. And you're going to be on July 18th, 19th, and 20th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then Thursday through Saturday, 24, 25, 26, at ParenziPlayers.com, P-I-R-E-N-Z-I, Players.com.
Parenziplayers.com.
Thank you. Okay, so Jake Walker is the director is with us, and Stephanie Moeller, who's playing Gretchen. And Gretchen, Gretchen character. But Stephanie, let's talk about your character. Who are you? What do you do in the play?
Gretchen sort of serves as a love interest for Faustus. At a certain point in the play, he decides that he wants a wife and goes out into the streets of Wittenberg and finds one.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Does Mephistopheles have anything to do with...
She does not, and that's an interesting part of Gretchen, is that she's actually a pure character, and Mephistopheles cannot really do much to her because she's so pure that a demon can't really get in there. And
there is a line in the play where Faustus asks Mephistopheles to intervene, but Mephistopheles says that she in our case, was just spying on Gretchen at confession in church, and she had nothing to confess.
It's true.
She's that pure.
She has no sins.
Wow, that kind of clarity, it can't be touched. Mm-hmm. Pure heart, huh?
Very true.
So that's why Dr. Faustus wants to marry you.
I don't know that that's really his primary reason for wanting Gretchen.
It's very much springboarded off of lust.
That's true.
Initially, and he sees her, and initially the attraction is very carnal, very, very sexual. But it becomes much more than that as things go along. Huh.
So you're not out to save Dr. Faustus?
No. Well, she doesn't know that he's sold his soul, or she can't see Mephistopheles. Mephistopheles isn't there. She just knows that there's this wonderful man that wants to be with her. Mm-hmm. That's all she knows of Faustus.
Huh. Is she much younger than Faustus?
There's a line in the script that says she's 19.
Faustus, 19, which I changed from 14 in the original.
Which is quite young.
Yeah, so we're like, we can bump it up to 19 at least. Huh. So Aaron is playing the role of Faustus at about his age, which is 35. So, I mean, it's a gap, but it's not an enormous
It's not an one. Unspeakable gap.
It's not a 35 and a 14. Yeah, we're not doing that.
Right.
So.
That would be
different. Oh, how interesting. How do you see your character? Do you have to delve deep to play your character?
She changes throughout the play. And I'm not going to give anything away, so I'll say that it's not something that's difficult for me to delve into, but there are parts that are very emotional, and I have to find certain places within myself, I don't know how to say it.
kind of what Aaron was saying in the first third, find aspects of yourself to enhance the character,
yes,
and aspects of the character to,
yes,
learn about yourself at the same time.
You don't experience the same things, but you look for things that might have, mm-hmm, made you feel the same way, mm-hmm, or you can identify with. But then you have to think of it from a different perspective as, mm-hmm, well.
Interesting. And you are the person who cast her to,
correct,
play this part. And you saw that innocent, you saw that purity in her that made you want to cast her, or that ability to play that part?
Mm-hmm. And I knew she could play the pure, but it was more the latter part of Gretchen's character development, which I won't give too much away, but it is a tragedy, so probably things aren't turning out too well. But that was the part that really sold me on Stephanie as Gretchen. And so it was an interesting cast. And watching toward the end at callbacks, when I saw Aaron and Stephanie read one of their last scenes together, I thought, well, there it is.
Okay. Oh, how nice for you to see that. Oh, that's good.
Especially when you have a love interest that happens right away. You have to have two actors that are going to...
They can pull it off. Yeah.
Right away.
The chemistry. The, mm-hmm, chemistry. And you can't fake that chemistry, can you?
Right. Well, you can, but it makes the process a lot more difficult. It's nice when you can just jump right in.
First date. Okay. Jake, tell us about theater in the Quad Cities. There's so many wonderful theater, mm-hmm, groups. A number of them have appeared here on the program, and you have been up here a couple of times.
Yeah, it's my third time on your show.
In various capacities. So what makes the Quad Cities such a thriving theater community?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, is the state of theater, I think, has always been strong in this area. You've had ones that have been around for a long time: Music Guild, Genesius, Playcrafters, Richmond Hill. So you've had these groups that have been around for a while, but it seems like within the last 10, 15 years, a lot of people have been inspired to start up their own groups. I mean, we started about 12 years ago. New Ground, District Theater, and where we're at right now, the Quad City Theater Workshop, they just sprung up about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And so, you know, people are getting inspired to go out and start their own thing.
Seems
and keep
like
diversifying the options, and improv as well. I mean, there's comedy, sports, and all kinds of, there's all kinds of different things to do here. And I don't think there's a weekend that goes by in this area that you can't go to see a show. So as long as there's actors, technicians, and directors that are willing to do the shows and patrons willing to go to the shows, I think that's probably going to continue to happen.
But you have to have the audience here who appreciates that, and apparently there is.
Mm-hmm. I remember there was a weekend a year or two ago where we had a show going on. There were, I think, literally about 10 different shows occurring on one night, and every one of them sold out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we all kind of noticed, like, people put on Facebook, hey, our show sold out, hey, our show, and we realize every show that had happened on that night sold out.
Gosh.
So there is an audience here, you know, people are hungry for it. Arts are, you know, the state of arts in this area is very strong, and I don't see any reason for that to stop.
Huh. Well, why aren't you in, say, Chicago or in Minnesota? Why don't you go to New York or Los Angeles? Why do you stay here?
Because it's expensive there. You know, a friend of mine said, he's been asked that question before too, and he said, you know, in Chicago, and I mean, don't get me wrong, there's lots of brilliant things that happen in Chicago, and I've known several people that have gone and sweated it out and paid their dues, and they make it or they don't. But here, you know, as a friend of mine said, you know, you can be here, you can go do a play, you can play King Lear, and then at the end of the day, you can still have your job, and then when you're done, you can still go home to your wife and your kids and your friends. So I don't know. It seems like you can almost have a little bit more of your life here. You know, you can do a play, but you can still do other things, whereas in a bigger city, and while there's a lot of amazing theater there, a lot of people I know are just scraping to get by so they can do the theater they love, and you don't have to do, a lot of us don't have to do that here as much.
And you probably wouldn't get the good parts. You'd have to wait in line?
There's a much longer line there for sure.
Interesting. So that's why you're staying?
Right now, I suppose.
you're staying because you want to have a life. And the people you're working with, is there better theater in Chicago than here?
I wouldn't
say better. I feel like there is a lot of talent in the Quad Cities, and it's spread out, and I feel like we have a lot of theater that is comparable to some of the shows that I've seen in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it's different from company to company. You have your big extravagant shows, and Chicago has a lot of those, and they also have their little theaters, and so do we. So I would say we're fairly comparable.
I think it's a lot of what we have here, it's just more of it there. You know, it's a larger area, more resources to pull
the
from.
The 2% is larger. So why did you become an actor? Why? What is the attraction of being an actor? You get to pretend? See, for me, being an artist, I'm looking to discover things about myself through my art. And so my sense is, okay, this is helping my spirit and my mind and develop. But to pretend to be somebody else doesn't really seem to help or be attractive to me.
It's funny because you would think that, but at the same time, you're learning so much about yourself because you're having to bring out those emotions of that character. You're having to find that in yourself. You have to reach for your sadness, find where it is. And it also helps you empathize with other people, because if you're playing somebody who's not at all like you, you have to get inside of their mind space and learn who they are. So you become more empathetic towards other people by learning what they're like.
So you have to step outside of your own psyche?
Oh, yeah. I feel like that happens.
Oh, that's interesting.
Fair amount.
And then by doing that, then you kind of look back and see yourself. It's like you have to leave America in order to write about it.
Exactly.
Correct.
Exactly.
The same kind of thing. Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. That makes it different.
Yeah.
How do you cry on stage? How do you empathize? How do you do that?
It's difficult for me.
You get cast in a lot of crying roles.
I do. And I don't know why.
I seldomly have to cry. You have to cry all the time.
The
innocent always
has to cry.
Honestly, it's not about even trying to cry, because it's more about trying to just find that horrible feeling that makes you cry. And it's just what comes out in your face. I actually usually don't produce tears on stage. I know some actors can, but I can't. And though I've been cast in shows where I've cried, and it's been very convincing, it's a matter of just finding that horror in yourself and that misery and just putting it out there.
While you're on stage and in character and in the role and the costume and the lights and the audience, you have to forget the lines and you have to find something like that?
Yeah, basically. That's the hard. Best way to do that kind of stuff is to just forget where you are and put yourself in that character and just be that person.
And that will generate the tears?
Pretty much.
Huh. How do you do it, Jake?
Well, I don't know. I'm not called upon to cry as much, but, you know, it's kind of the same thing. And then if all else fails, there's this thing where you kind of like raise your soft palate and kind of yawn, and it makes you look like you're crying. So it's a, if all else fails, you can do that. There is actually, and I've never used it, but there is actually it's in like a little chapstick tube, and you put it under your eyes, it'll make your eyes burn and tear up.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I've never used it in the show, but I have. Someone gave me a tube, and I have put it on before, and it works. It burns a lot. Mm. So that, you know, if absolutely all else fails, put the stuff under your eyes.
That seems like cheating.
I concur. That's why I haven't done it. Yeah.
But every day, at 7:30 at night or 8:30 at night, you have to.
Here we go. Yep.
You have to cry. You have to make yourself do it. I think that's incredible.
It's very tiring.
And it consuming. Can be. Well, this is marvelous. Hats off to you guys for going for 12 years. Your theater company is playing well. You're at Willard School, that just passed 5 points on Locust, going west on Locust, just past 5 points. On the left, there's the old school building, Willard School.
There's a sign that'll say it's currently now the Institute for Therapeutic Massage. So that's what you'll see. There's a sign for that as you drive by. Mm-hmm. And it's just basically it's the old gymnasium that we kind of worked with Tyson and the Quad City Theater Workshop, and we basically just turned this old gymnasium into a black box theater, and it's a pretty cool space. And this is our sixth show we've done there. We've been all over. We've played in all the Quad Cities, both sides of the river. But we're pretty happy with this space. It's worked well. We've got some great people on this cast. We're continuing our unbroken streak of having at least one new person in every show. Mm. And about a third of our cast is brand new, of our 15 actors, and it's been a lot of fun, and I hope people will enjoy it.
I think so. Last question. What advice do you have for young artists? What can you tell us? What advice can you give for young actors?
I would say just my biggest thing is, you know, find what you love to do and do it, and figure out what other people like too. Try things you haven't tried before. You know, you may discover something that you didn't know you enjoyed.
Definitely step out of the box, step out of your box, and keep trying. Never just give up because you don't think you're good enough.
Excellent, excellent advice. July 18th, 19th, and 20th, 24th, 25th, and 26th, Dr. Faustus, PerenziPlayers.com, P-I-R-E-N-Z-I-E, Players.com. Thank you very much. Wonderful show. That's it for us today on Art Talks. Many thanks to our guests. Many thanks to our audio engineer, that maestro of sound, Dave Garner. As always, I'm Bruce Carter. Until next week, have a great night and a fine tomorrow. See you soon, Laura.
Support for Art Talks comes from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from the Bucktown Center for the Arts, 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com.